Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, welcome to BT Sports podcast, Life's a Pitch. My name is Mike Calvin. I'm joined by Tom Hopkinson of The People and Darren Lewis of The Daily Mirror. Wales, first class, first place. England, second place. Second rate? That may be too harsh, but all this is very familiar. No plan, no faith. Roy Hodgson is talking about making someone pay, but will it be him, Tom?
I'm going to wait and tell you next Monday if I can. I mean, the important thing is progress has been made. That's what everyone was screaming for 2 years ago when we
left. Very limited progress.
Look, we asked him to get out of the group at the very least. We asked him not to finish bottom of the group as they did in Brazil, home after 5 days there. He's finished second. Yes, it was a group we should have won. We could have won it. I still think we've been the better side in each of the three games that we've played. We just haven't been clinical enough in the final third of the field. I think you can't blame Roy Hodgson for that. You know, there's only so much he can do in terms of getting the players out there, getting them into a formation. And I think given the possession that we've had and the way that we've moved the ball around in 45-minute periods, I think you can actually see progress. And I think you look back at the Slovakia game, and England could easily have won that 3-0. We had the chances. You know, Daniel Sturridge snaffles that ball up over the top if he's playing for Liverpool, puts it in the back of the net. Jamie Vardy, we've seen him score those one-on-ones several times for Leicester City over the past 2 years. So I'm not as disheartened as it seems the rest of the nation is. Mm.
Ifs, buts, maybes. The thing that strikes me, Darren, looking at it, is that I don't think Roy Hodgson knows his best team. And if that's the case, and I don't know whether you agree with that, what does that say about him as a manager?
Well, I think he's too loyal to certain players, for sure. I've always felt, and even though he has performed well, I still think Wayne Rooney has been shoehorned into midfield. And when you look at the accomplished performances of other midfielders in the tournament, you realise just how much that is the case. I disagree with Tom. I think as far as England are concerned, to suggest that we haven't been clinical enough when we got the Footballer of the Year, the Golden Boot winner and England's all-time record scorer, plus one of the most exciting young talents in Marcus Rashford, it really doesn't reflect well on Hodgson. I think when you look at the group as a whole, he has picked them, but the problem is he's got to devise a way of getting the best out of them. And I don't think, for example, Jamie Vardy, that ball over the top that was quite effective in the first half against Slovakia, we didn't see it often enough. We didn't see him outpacing the last two defenders against Russia when the game was crying out for him to be thrown on in the second half. The players keep talking about taking the positives. In the knockout stages, you can't take positives. You've got to be decisive. You've got to take your chances because you won't get an opportunity to reflect on the hard luck stories. And the most damning aspect of the group stages is that we couldn't beat Slovakia. We couldn't beat Russia. We had our hard luck stories. Wales didn't. Wales went out there. They put Slovakia to the sword. They made good decisions. They put Russia to the sword. They won with the minimum of fuss. I think the results that Wales have managed to get in this group stage really have shown up how ineffective Roy Hodgson has been with vast with superior, you could argue, resources. Mm.
Do you think, you know, is there an element that, you know, people like us maybe have to take a share of the blame here? Because if you look at, say, that first game, Roy made a traditional Roy mistake, being too conservative, went 1-0 up, tried to protect that lead, didn't happen. Now, when we played Slovakia, he responded to this great conservative, what he would see as a slur, by making six changes, which actually absolutely madness.
Well, I mean, we do. We have to take our fair share of the blame. But, you know, I would say as journalists, you're only asking the questions that the general public are feeling. So Roy has to be big enough, man enough, and he is, to make those decisions on his own without any guidance. But, you know, to go back to what Darren was saying when we talk about Vardy not getting enough of the ball over the top. So should Roy have taken Danny Drinkwater? Now, if he'd have taken Danny Drinkwater, a man who has supplied him, who had been that supply line with all the passes throughout the season, everyone would have gone crazy about the fact that Wayne Rooney wasn't there. And yet Rooney, after the first couple of games, everyone was saying that he was the best player we had by far. So he's a little bit damned if he does and damned if he doesn't.
I think you could have taken Danny Drinkwater, who has had an exceptional season, and not taken Jack Wilshere, who hasn't played 90 minutes for a year.
And it showed, didn't it?
And it showed, because he's had a lot of criticism, when actually it's not really his fault. Roy Hodgson has been too loyal to him when he should have taken a difficult decision and says, I like you as a player, you've done well for me in qualifying, but you're just not fit enough. Danny Drinkwater, on merit, should have been in there, but Jack Wilshere was there because of who he was.
Okay, I seem to be alone in this, but I didn't think Wilshere. I thought for an hour, I thought he actually had a reasonably good game.
But you would accept that he's not fit.
No, of course he's not. No. You can't be.
But can you get your fitness at the highest level of European football?
He shouldn't have taken three players who there were injury concerns over, or who were lacking in fitness. You know, Henderson, Sturridge, and Wilshere. I do agree with that, but I don't see that Wilshere did too much different to what Wayne Rooney would have done had he played the full game. You know, we needed a little bit more zip in midfield, and Rooney against Wales in the first half, there wasn't. Again, there were criticisms of him in that first half, which I thought were a little bit over the top. Again, this is all this reactionary state that we are now. But, we're not quite as incisive as we needed to be. And I thought Wilshere, yes, he gave the ball away at times, but it was because he was looking for that zipped pass. He was trying to move things along quickly, not trying to hit these 30-yard Hollywood passes that seemed to be, certainly in a half against Russia and a half against Wales, Wayne Rooney's staple.
Just to answer the question... I don't have a problem with the changes that Roy Hodgson made. I think if you look at the French, they managed to win their first game, but they still felt that there was something missing, so they changed it. We have good players. We see that week in, week out during the domestic season. Why not give those players them? Certainly, if we are to progress in the tournament, those players will need game time. So I don't have a problem with that. You know, I was saying myself, we've taken Jack Wilshere. He hasn't been fit. Why has he not played so far? So he does need the game time.
And that's the sort of mistake that's been made in the past, isn't it?
So absolutely.
We were forewarned with this. And do we have to look at the way that England approach tournaments? Are we a bit too precious? You know, we've all been around England camps, and it's paranoia central quite regularly.
Yeah.
Is the same thing happening again?
Yeah, I mean, you speak to the lads who are out there covering it, and it is, you know, they just go into lockdown. There is so much paranoia around it, and yet, you know, I remember when you and I were in South Africa in 2010 and the Dutch camp, you know, it was just magnificent to go down there and access to the players. Everyone was very relaxed, and it did them no harm at all. Went all the way to the final, of course, but then the Dutch aren't there this time, so England have in qualifying. Roy Hodgson has done exactly right, you know. I just think that we would all be looking at it very different if we'd have beaten Russia, which we should have done. Roy made a big mistake in putting Milner on. He should have stretched the game more. Vardy's pace, Sturridge's pace, somebody like that. And he paid the price for that, I felt, in the Slovakia game. But, yeah, I do agree that when paranoia kicks in with England, it takes a little bit of the fun away for the players, I think, and just adds to the pressure.
And it'll get worse this week, won't it?
It will get worse this week because... there'll be a forensic examination of what went wrong, and B, Wales are going from strength to strength, and held up against Wales, we do look to be spluttering our way through the tournament. I think Portugal, if we are to play them, will represent difficult opposition. You know, Cristiano Ronaldo is champing at the bit, really, to score goals for his country. It's been so difficult for him so far. But they have other wonderful players who can hurt England. It's all very well saying at some stage somebody's going to be made to pay, but England might not get that chance because they've been so insipid so far.
I think the one thing we're forgetting, though, is that Wales have got a world-class finisher that England haven't got in Neil Taylor. I mean, the way he took that goal. But the pressure with England is so much more intense than the pressure
it's
with
joyless,
Wales.
It's joyless, though, isn't it? It seems really joyless.
Well, it didn't seem joyless after the Wales game, did it? You know, I mean, look, I think let's look at the three games rather than the isolation of it. You know, everyone was over the moon. Everyone was thrilled at the Wales game. But the Welsh can go out, you know, 58 years since they were last at a major tournament. They're playing with complete freedom because if they go home at the end of the group phase, then, you know, and they're also... Russia and Slovakia would probably think that they could get something out of Wales. Certainly Slovakia would think they could get something out of Wales, so they would probably play more openly than they would against England.
Basics not being addressed set pieces have been appalling for England.
Set pieces have been appalling, okay. But breaking down two banks
now
is, of...
That's a selection issue, isn't it? You know, which goes right back to the squad.
And it goes back to Townsend, which I felt that Andros Townsend should have been included in the squad, perhaps at the expense of Ross Barkley, because, again, he would have stretched teams. And when you're looking at the starting lineup that Roy Hodgson picked for the Slovakia game, Harry Kane coming off the bench is not going to be as scary or as worrisome for defenders as the likes of Vardy, Sturridge coming off the bench with their pace 60 minutes in, and, of course, Andros Townsend. So I do take that point, but I don't know. I look at it and I think we criticise England, but if they grow into this tournament, you know, the foundations are there. We've got good rest now before the game on Monday. Get everyone fit, get everyone rejuvenated, and let's go again.
Let's think like a media-trained England footballer and accentuate the positives. Eric Dier, I think he's been one of the players of the tournament.
Superb.
Yep, he has. Fantastic free kick against the Russians. Plays with a lot of assuredness and composure in front of the back four. The big problem is when he went down against Slovakia, there was a collective intake of breath because if he gets injured, we're bang in trouble.
Yeah.
So although you look at the positives as in terms of individuals, Nathaniel Klein as well, fantastic, really realised that he does have a fight for that right back berth and showed it last night with a very, very good performance. But although there are those positives, they are all set against negatives as far as England are concerned. And we shouldn't be in a stage where we're clutching at straws for the positives. We should be like the French who are winning games but still trying to get better. The Spaniards who haven't conceded, the Italians who haven't conceded. That's the base at this tournament that we should be building on. We've been here on far too many occasions to be mired in all of this mediocrity
again. Look at the Germans. Look at Germany, the world champions. They've arguably performed worse than England so
far. Yeah, but two games... No goals conceded.
But you would still expect them to go a long way in the tournament.
And a draw. Yeah, because they've not managed to be out of the last four since Euro 2004
Why are we looking at England so negatively when if we were sitting here analysing Germany's performance so far, you'd be using words like lacklustre.
But there's a big but. Germany have pedigree.
Traditionally grows into a tournament.
Yes, of course. And that's exactly what I'm saying. Why do we not believe that this England team, you know, it's building. Why don't we believe that we get the next game?
Because they've let us down on so many occasions before, and we are making the same mistakes that we have made before with a superior, arguably, team. So I would say that
Really? Is it that superior to the 2004 and 2006?
Look at how many strikers we have got, potent strikers who have excelled over the course of the season. Look at the midfielders that we've taken you would imagine would be able to supply the ammunition for those players. I think we've got a good...
We've created chances. This is my issue. We've created chances. The boys just haven't put them away.
But let's look at Wales and what they represent and what they symbolise, which is this great, you know, mythical thing called team spirit. You've got people in that team who are surpassing their traditional form at club level. Look at Joe Allen. He's been fantastic in this tournament.
I completely agree, but this is sort of the point that we were talking about earlier. You know, the pressure is different, that, you know, the shackles are off Wales, they can go out, there are no expectations. It just isn't the same as playing for England. Now, whose fault is that? Is it the media's fault? The players would arguably say, yes, it is. In fact, I don't think a lot of them would argue about that. They would just say, it absolutely is. I remember speaking to mates of players who've been away with squads, and they just say it's all-encompassing. You know, it's too much pressure on the players. Now, I think if you're an international quality football, he should be able to handle that pressure. But the Welsh are free from that. They just don't have to have that that concern.
See, it's funny, because if you look at the Italians and the Spanish, they have massive pressure too.
Well, the Italians have gone into it, though, with people saying it's the worst Italian team for 50 years.
Absolutely.
So where's the pressure on that?
But there is still pressure on those players to perform once
they get to the
tournament.
I think what struck me most about Wales was they got this, like, no-regrets ethos. Let's just go out and give it a go. So, for instance...
But they can have no regrets.
We can't.
If England came home after three games, they would get absolutely slaughtered, whereas with Wales, I disagree with that.
I mean, Chris Coleman early in the campaign was clinging to his job because he was struggling. I think it was a no-win in nine for him, and some people were saying he was the wrong man to take control of that group. The actual ethos that Wales do have is together stronger. That's what's helped them to top their group. That's what helped them to beat Belgium in Cardiff, to manage to go to Brussels and get a goalless draw. Four goals conceded in qualifying. So far in the tournament, no team has scored more goals during the first half. They have really come to this tournament not wanting to be patronised, but wanting to be respected. And now, in front French television, they're talking about them being the dark horses, possibly, in this tournament.
We're lauding Wales. Yes, they've won the group, but they've beaten Russia and Slovakia.
But of the two teams at the moment, firstly, which team tops the group? Wales. Which team has the more optimism going into the knockout stages? Wales. I think if you look at England, there is this concern that if we come up against a decent team, we will get beaten.
They've got feel-good factor. It's in their favour. You've got Joe Legley coming back after his broken leg and dancing.
Very impressive.
You know, doing dead dancing down the touchline. You've got Gareth Bale. Now they've got him on the ball.
Yeah.
We've really seen what he's capable of. I can understand people wanting them to succeed because there is that feel-good factor.
And I would have loved nothing more. I mean, I love the fact that England and Wales have gone through to the next phase. I would have preferred it had we topped the group and Wales been second. Mm. I'm not taking anything away from Wales. They're brilliant. Absolutely not at all. And what they've done is magnificent. And we haven't got a Gareth Bale, but how many teams at the European Championships have got that one standout player? Sweden have got a Zlatan. I don't hear everyone going on about, you know, how amazing...
Well, for me, he's been one of the disappointments of the tournament.
I agree with that. All this fanfare about him, obviously on the back of his club situation and the way that he's been a bit of a shrinking violet with PSG. but, you know, Sweden have been hugely disappointing and they've struggled so far in the tournament. They could go out.
Portugal as well. Ronaldo. Mm-hmm. You know, look at the second game he had. And yet England now might be talking about facing them in the next round. So, you know...
What's your view, Tom, of the Republic of Ireland? You know, they've got a game against what is probably going to be a Hodgson-esque remodelled Italian team. Are they in danger of going out?
I think so, yeah. And it's such a shame to say that because they have played well and they have played well enough to deserve to go through, I think. But I look at the way Italy are playing, you know, we sort of joke about the fact that it's supposed to be the worst Italian side for 50 years and they have been excellent. I mean, performances from the likes of Giaccherini, who, Sunderland fans will be watching him and wondering where that's come from. but then you look at the back three that Italy play. I mean, they are just old war horses, aren't they? Just absolutely superb. And I really think that the Republic, for everything they've done well, I just think they may struggle to break that back three down.
Mm. What about Martin O'Neill as a man? He was very effective at club level. Mm. He's always seemed a bit to be, you know, a fish out of water at international level. I don't know. What do you think?
Well, you look at the way that he's used the Republic side at this tournament, and it's really been Roy Keane that's been dominating. Roy Keane trying to shake them out of their lethargy. You look at some of the decisions he made in the last game against Belgium. He put Robbie Keane on for Shane Long late in the game. Well, Robbie Keane's 35. He wasn't able to lead the line when he was 25. Mm. And I think that was asking quite a lot of him in that match. Misplaced passes, Shane Long running down blind alleys or being presented with 2-on-1 situations. You just look at some of the decisions he made in that game. I wonder if they may have been carried away with the opening result and believed that maybe that was a springboard for something because they've been caught out quite badly. And I think, as you say, Martin O'Neill, he hasn't had a great campaign.
What about Conte? You know, we're looking at him in the context of Chelsea. Mm. There's talk about Bonucci going with him, Candreva as well, which does suggest, in the big scheme of things, that he might well play three at the back at Chelsea. Mm-hmm. An awful lot of money being spoken about, 50-odd million, for 29-year-olds. What does that say?
It says Chelsea finished mid-table last season and know that they've got to do, similarly to when Jose Mourinho came in, actually. They know they have to throw money at getting back into the Champions League, and it's no object, is it? Let's not worry about spending 30-odd million quid on 29-year-olds if they get a couple of seasons out of them and they get them back into the Champions League at the first time of asking. I think Graziano Pella will be the very interesting one for me. I've heard from a couple of people now that he is very much a target for Antonio Conte, so whether they'll be able to take advantage of Southampton's situation. I think he's only got a year left there, and the fact there's no manager there at the moment. So it'd be interesting to see him linking up with Diego Costa or perhaps even replacing him because, you know, I think Pelé sometimes is overlooked. I think he's far better quality than people give him credit for. You wouldn't be leading the line for Italy, would you, at a major tournament?
While we're on Southampton, you know, Wanyama's going now. It's last man turn out the lights, isn't it?
Again.
Well, every time they tell us that they are not selling, you know that you can take it with a pinch of salt because as far as Southampton are concerned, everyone sees them as a stepping stone to bigger things. Koeman's been talking about a contract wrangle, but Southampton wouldn't say that. So it's quite clear to everyone that Everton are the club with the bigger potential as far as he is concerned. Wanyama, who's wanted to go to Tottenham since last year, put the transfer request in. They could have got maybe double the amount that they're going to get for him had they sold at the time. But they try to do this thing where they say, we're big enough to keep hold of him, you're not going anywhere. Mane wants to leave as well. Liverpool very interested, one of a number of clubs very interested in him. And I think Southampton, it's a difficult one for them because they should have had Koeman locked down a long time ago. Had they managed to do that, maybe they would have been in a stronger position to take a hard line with some of their best players. As things stand, I think the exodus will continue.
Yeah, and we're in the middle now of tournament mania, aren't we? You know, players quite obviously, it seems, looking at the difference in their form, playing for a move. Mm. So you look at Moussa Sissoko. He basically stirred when Rafa Benitez turned up at Newcastle. Really took opportunity in the last game for France. He's the sort of guy who will get a move off the back of the tournament, isn't he?
You would think so. I mean, the one positive for Newcastle fans, and I think Sissoko is one of, if not their best player when he deigns to put a shift in, the one positive is that they don't have to sell anyone. Credit again to Mike Ashley. I say credit again because I think we have to credit him when he does things positive. There's so much we could say negative about some of the way business has been handled up there, but he will back Benitez. I mean, having convinced Benitez to stay, he will give him everything he wants. And if Benitez says to Sissoko, just give me one more year, if he felt that he wanted him to stay, you would hope that he would give him that. But you're absolutely right. I mean, he clearly sees it as a bit of a springboard, this competition. But I think sometimes you can get back within your international teammates. You're speaking your first language again. Pressure's not on. It's not, well, the pressure is on because you're playing for France in a home tournament. But it's not like being in that melting pot of Newcastle week after week and, you know, it dragging out over the length of time.
I just wonder whether Newcastle fans will want to see him in a Newcastle shirt again after what he said. Because effectively what he says is, I'm too good for Newcastle in the Championship. Mm. So he is not up for that fight. Mm. And the fact that he's playing so well, I mean, he's unrecognisable from the player that was a Newcastle player during the domestic season. If you're a Newcastle fan, would you want to see him pull that shirt on again? Or would you want Rafa Benitez to say, you know what, on you go, let's get some players and we actually care about the club?
Do you expect him to stay in that France side? And what's your assessment of France after the group stages? Because, you know, it looks like, you know, if England get through, they're going to play them in the quarterfinals.
Yeah, and I know Roy Hodgson says he's not afraid of anyone, but you would, I think the whole nation would not expect us to get past France. The last game they weren't great in, but they'd done the business, hadn't they, by then? I mean, so pleased for Dimitri Payet, the way he started the tournament, just took the form that he showed at West Ham all season. For a man who didn't think that he was necessarily going to even be in the squad, we sat down with him in April and he wasn't adamant. You know, he said, look, I've given myself the best possibility, but if it doesn't happen for me, so be it. You know, so for him to go and light up the tournament, and I love watching Griezmann play as well. The way he has picked himself up from the disappointment of the Champions League final, I think is an absolute credit to him. I would be very, very nervy if England drew France.
I think as far as Sissoko is concerned, the talk is that he will replace Matuidi in the side and that he will be a starter for their next game.
And that will give more scope for Pogba, won't it?
It will indeed, because Deschamps has really been wrestling with how to get the best out of him. Some people believe he's much better in an offensive role, but Deschamps initially deployed him in a defensive role. Mm. But I think as far as France overall is concerned, I tip them to win it. I think they will. I think just because of the circumstance surrounding the country as a whole, I think it may act as an inspiration for them. Payet, as you rightly say, Tom, last year he thought Deschamps had a grudge against him because Deschamps said, I've got so many better players, regardless of what you did at Marseille, where it was exceptional, as well as at West Ham, I still think I've got better players. This guy is saving the nation at the moment. He was on the front cover of L'Equipe the other day. He is their national treasure. I think he may well inspire them to go on even further into the competition, and I think he might well end up as the player of the tournament.
I think the triumvirate that Darren mentions as well in midfield, you know, the Sissokos, the Matuidis, the Pogbas, I mean, what a midfield that is. And that's the sort of, you know, again, when we talk about growing into a tournament, you know, when you think that Pogba played very well, I thought, in the first game, and hooked for the second game, wasn't he? You know, unbelievably. But you know, that gives him the chance now. It gives them, they're going into the latter stages now with players still fresh, still hungry, and again growing into it. So it's a huge positive.
And what about the Belgians? You know, if you look at them on paper, that's a heck of a squad. And they finally turned up against the Republic, didn't they?
There was a goal that they scored. Axel Witsel, 28 passes in that move, the most of any goal at the tournament. And it kind of showed that they are starting to click. Now, you could argue that the Republic gave them the time and the space. Once the first goal went in, the Republic abandoned their kind of safety-first approach and gave them that space to operate. That said, they probably needed a performance as well as a result like that to get their confidence, because they have lacked cohesion. They've been one of the big disappointments when you consider, as you rightly say, the players that they have in that squad. You would hope that they'll continue with it now. I think one more win and they're through to the knockout stages, or even a point and they're through to the knockout stages. But yeah, I am looking for more, not just from the team as a whole, but particularly from Eden Hazard, from Romelu Lukaku, who filled his boots, probably could have got a couple more against the Irish as well. It's great to see, because we do want to see that. It's almost like their golden generation, isn't it? And there is a little bit of England about them in the way that they've disappointed, but certainly now that they've started to score goals, maybe they can
Look about a team without Fellaini in it, I think.
Yeah, what's interesting, the word team as well, though. I mean, they've got a great midfield again, you know, when you can be affording to leave out Moussa Dembele out of your starting lineup, Nangolan as well, Axel Witsel, you know, and it's quite a compliment to Fellaini, really, because you have to play a certain way if you're going to play, but that just shows what an unbelievable talent he is at playing the way he plays. But it doesn't always help with the speed that you want to move the ball through midfield at. You know, you are going to be pinging long passes up if you play through him in the middle. But you're right, you're always going to look a better side if you've got Moussa Dembele playing than Marouane Fellaini, but again, effective in their own ways. But what I found fascinating with the Belgians, there was a lot of talk before the tournament about how well they got on as a group, and it's still continued, hasn't it? Thibaut Courtois has been very open about the fact that he questioned Mark Wilmot's plans in the first game after the Italy game. And you see them interviewed afterwards, none of them denying that there is this unease. You know, Lukaku, you know, he was asked about the team spirit and he practically said, look, doesn't matter, you know, we'll just go out and we'll do it.
Now, we get again, that in England, we go,
yeah, this is exactly the point I was going to make. Can you imagine? Can you imagine the furore if England's players came out and basically said, yeah, we went crackers at Roy after the first game, we should have got, you know, just England can't do it.
The overall point is correct, because when you look at some of the press conferences, the players are talking about moves to other clubs and all that. Yeah. It just doesn't seem to be that focus on what they're there to do. Listen, we as
the
journalists,
highest ranked
we
team
love
in the tournament as well, you know.
Absolutely. We love it as journalists.
Is, there a sense, though, that, you know, the tournament will really begin in earnest when we get down to knockouts?
Yeah, I mean, this, to me, I mean, you think back to the last Euros and it just exploded, didn't it? You know, it exploded into life from day one. This one, it sort of meandered through the first week and a half because of the extended format, the expanded format. You know, there are teams there now. And again, the little Englander in me says, you know, Slovakia... nine players defending. Now, you go in, let's say...
teams break them down.
Absolutely. Listen, for the first time, I disagree with you. I've loved this group stage. I think it's been competitive. I think it's been entertaining.
I think it's been dramatic. But has it been the explosion of football?
11
that we saw,
goals
great football
in the last 5 minutes of games. I don't think we...
We're having 90 minutes before, though, Darren.
Well, but what I'm saying is that there are so many games that have finished with a flourish that have left you thinking, goodness me, that was a bit of a roller coaster.
Yeah, look, it's been enjoyable. I'm not saying that, but I just think... I think overall the quality has not been anywhere near what
it was. You sounded like Cristiano Ronaldo there.
OK.
I like him as well.
Final question has to be asked. England.
I think you probably know where I'm going to...
How far are they going to get?
I think quarters.
Yeah. I have to say I would worry about the knockout stage. I don't think they'll necessarily get much further.
You have little faith.
Well, I think same old, same old. I think, sad to say, it's over and out, possibly in the quarterfinals. Thanks for joining us here on Life's a Pitch.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.